The Auto Workers Union in the wake of the Tennessee vote.
Marketplace Morning Report is produced in association with the University of Southern California.
From APM in New York, I'm David Brancaccio with the Marketplace Midday Update. The United Auto Workers had worked for years to get a foot in the door of the Volkswagen factory in Tennessee. But workers at the plant have turned down the proposal for some union representation by a vote of 712 to 626. There are questions this morning about what's next for a union that is only a quarter the size it was 35 years ago. The union says it's evaluating what it sees as outside interference in the vote in Tennessee and may challenge the result. Brent Snavely writes about the automotive industry for the Detroit Free Press, and he's just back from Chattanooga.
They could continue to try to do what they were doing. They came close here. The other option, which is interesting, I mean, I think, you know, the union's called the United Auto Workers, but really less than half of their members now work either for the Detroit Three or for auto parts suppliers. They have a large presence with state government workers as well as casino and higher education workers, and the bulk of their organizing victories in recent years have come from the casino and higher education arena. So maybe we see a thought that they go more full bore in those areas.
So you can walk into a casino now and an employee might be a member of the UAW?
Yep. There are 10,000 members of the UAW are workers in the gaming industry in states ranging from Connecticut to Florida to Indiana to Michigan to Las Vegas.
And what about higher ed?
Higher ed, they've had, again, very broad geographic success. They've had some victories at universities in California, and they've also had victories at New York University. In Tennessee, one of the big challenges they faced was they were really branded as the union from the north coming down south to try to take dues back up north to Detroit. But again, there, if you think about higher education representation, they're broader than just the north. It's also California and New York.
It's very interesting. Brent Snavely at the Detroit Free Press, thank you for this.
Thank you very much.
There's news that despite aggressive efforts to pump money into the Japanese economy, the effort is not going that well. The Japanese government today reported the economy there, October to December, grew at an annualized rate of just 1%, much lower than forecast. Digesting this early report card on Abenomics is the BBC's Rupert Wingfield Hayes in Tokyo.
It doesn't seem to be working quite like it was advertised. So, you know, there was a lot of hype at the introduction of this massive new economic program. Here we are a year later, and it just doesn't seem to be having much of an effect so far. Last year, for the year as a whole, Japan grew by 1.6%. The year before Abenomics, it grew by 1.4%. So, you know, really, we're not seeing much difference.
Exports have been a real disappointment for Japan, even though the falling yen last year should have made Japanese products cheaper for foreign buyers. All this notwithstanding, the Nikkei index in Tokyo rose 0.6% today. Snow's the word in much of the country, but so's the word drought in Texas and the far west. The rain has been sparse for almost 2 years now. Marketplace's Adrian Hill looks at how we value the water we have.
I shower nearly every day. Long, hot showers. I think about the day ahead, what I'm going to wear. Sometimes I hum. I do not think about water.
We wake up in the morning, we turn on the tap, and out comes as much water as we want for less than we pay for cell phone service or cable television.
Robert Glennon is the author of Unquenchable, America's Water Crisis and What to Do About It. He's also a professor at the University of Arizona.
Unfortunately, when most of us think about water, we think of it as the air, like the air, infinite and inexhaustible, when for all practical purposes, it's very finite and very exhaustible.
As we know from our economics classes, treating supply as if it's unlimited, inexhaustible when it's not, likely means one thing. Most of us don't pay enough for it. Peter Glick is president of the Pacific Institute, which studies water use in California. He says if you take a look at the complex set of laws in place around water, who gets it, who doesn't?
It's not a rational system.
A more sensible system would be more efficient. We'd allocate differently, price differently. And he says we'd think differently.
The value of water is more than just the amount of money we can get out of using it to do something.
The value of water extends beyond the value to farmers and businesses, to the ecosystem and environment. A value, Glick says, California's ignored for a long time.
Because of that, our wetlands have disappeared and our fisheries are dying and our salmon are going extinct.
But revaluing water, pushing back against current policy, isn't for the faint of heart. Here's Arizona's Glennon again.
The reality is that if you want to have a short life as a public official, what you want to do is to advocate raising the price of water.
But sometimes a drought can force the issue. I'm Adrienne Hill for Marketplace.
And the San Francisco Chronicle is reporting that Apple could be developing a way for a high-end Apple-y wristwatch to include sensors that would issue an early warning that the wearer is suffering or is about to suffer a heart attack. The same Chronicle piece has the tech world tweeting about a high-level meeting between the electric car maker Tesla and Apple. But before anyone concludes that an Apple car is on the way, please note that neither company has been commenting. In New York, I'm David Brancaccio with the Marketplace Midday Update from APM, American Public Media.